That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Hello and welcome to the Antiques Shit Show, our end of series Succession special. Please, under no circumstances, continue listening unless you've seen the final episode to its very end. I'm Andrew Harrison, and joining me are two regulars who've had their face eggs glued to Succession since the start. Hannah Fern.
Hello.
And Alex Andreo.
Hello.
So we have to start by asking the very simple question. Did the finale work for you, Hannah?
Yes.
Did you love it?
Oh, I did love it. I liked the sort of the roller coaster of it, the emotional roller coaster and the brutality. So the fact that you get that vignette of what could be the kind of coming together of the three siblings, the kind of emotional bonding moment, and then how quickly it shattered. Perfect.
Yeah. How about you, Alex? Did you like it?
I thought it was perfect. Absolutely perfect. Not only that, I thought it was the right ending. I thought it was the ending that left me least despairing about the world that this family leaves in their wake.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I liked, I mean, I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was impactful. I thought every character got, shall we say, justice, right? They got what they had either earned or deserved. And considering that everybody in this show is awful to a greater or lesser degree, it at least had that satisfaction of this is probably what ought to have happened, that people are sort of rewarded and punished at the same time.
Yes, and the character development continues even into the final moment. So we're seeing who they're becoming and the kind of great essence of each of them, even in those last moments. And it's very fitting. I didn't feel like any of that struck the wrong note at the end.
Yeah. I mean, we do end literally with a completely beaten Kendall, literally walking out of Waystar, both physically and, you know, mentally and spiritually. And he just keeps on walking. He's off into a meaningless afterlife. It's like a living death. And the worst of it is he's got his dad's bodyguard shadowing him.
Yeah.
Like a kind of memento mori of like, you are a cosplay of your dad.
I mean, the metaphor will be talked about a lot, the water metaphor. You know, there's that question. Is he going to the side of the river because he wants to chuck himself in?
Yeah.
He can't even if he wanted to, he can't even complete that act because he's shadowed by his father's member of staff who won't allow that to happen.
Yeah.
The idea that even in death, his father is still controlling every single fibre of his being, he can't even commit suicide, that's ambiguous. That was just my interpretation.
No, I think you're spot on with that. And also the fact that in his private moments throughout all four seasons, when he's not having to perform for a shareholders meeting or for his siblings or for the board, Kendall is like a walking dead man. There's nothing there. It's all been gouged out. And maybe there was nothing there in the first place. Maybe that's what being the son of his father has made of him.
And the fact that his father, we learn in the final, that first spoke to him about Succession at 7 years of age. I mean, he's literally created all this stuff.
Yeah. Alex, what did you think of that final scene?
I concede that this is the popular understanding of it completely. I didn't find it like that. I didn't find him empty, hollow, desperate at all. He's beaten for sure. But he's also free for the first time in his life, probably. And so I thought actually the water metaphor for the first time was the opening up of possibilities. And I found the presence of his father's bodyguard and chauffeur very comforting, as if he's going to be a sort of mentor for him. So I didn't get that emotionally at all. I thought there was a walk up to the balustrade that was very bleak, and then a walk back and the sitting down on the park bench was actually a lift.
That's really interesting, because one of the standout moments of Colin the bodyguard is, I think earlier in this season, he eyeballs Kendall at a point where Kendall has been aggressively against Logan and says, "I know you. I know you." You know, like really stares into Kendall's soul. Mm. And the fact that he's still, you know, we saw Colin be like a, you know, like a dog whose master has just died when Logan dies. But the idea that perhaps Colin sees something in Kendall that maybe Kendall doesn't even know is there is really interesting. Did any of us call it? Did we, you know, I know that Tom coming out on top seems, in retrospect, obviously perfectly fitting. There's nobody else who it could reasonably go to without in some way undermining what the show's about.
I did think that he would be in some way part of the resolution, although not necessarily in that role, but I suspected that. But that's partly because we know what Logan thought of him. We know that Logan thought he was a terrible human being. We heard what he said to Shiv on her wedding day about marrying this empty soul of a man, an idiot, ultimately. And it's not what he wanted. He would not have wanted Tom to take control of his business. And so the idea that ultimately all that we do in life, that our great efforts to build and protect and control things that we build, our ego essentially is meaningless, is a great way to end it. That, you know, it doesn't matter how hard you try to hold on to this stuff and how many people you manipulate in doing so, once you're gone, you're gone. What we do is meaningless, really. I thought it's probably bleak, but that's how I enjoyed that ending.
It's one bleak comedy, this, isn't it?
I mean, I called it for Tom a couple of times, but then in fairness, I have called it for everyone at one point or another during the four seasons. So I'm not sure it's massively meaningful.
Also, it's a limited pool. And once you've struck out all the siblings, because he couldn't really hand it to one of the siblings without unbalancing the show.
No, but can I just say something? Tom is not on top. I don't know what show you were watching.
Well,
Tom is the Twitter CEO that Elon Musk would have appointed if the regulatory authority had made him. He has next to no power and the longevity of a soft avocado fruit. I mean, as Shiv puts it, his main attribute is that he will suck the biggest dick.
Isn't that what the show is about? The being on top is not being on top, unless you're a gargantuan monster like Logan.
Well, exactly. It was for Logan.
Yeah.
It was for Logan. But no one can fill that void. So what you end up with is a puppet. And a tech guy.
Yeah.
I do think, though, that it was important in the telling of the story about Shiv that he got it as well. Because, you know, Shiv meets this moment of understanding at the end, which is incredibly bleak as a woman, which is ultimately accepting that she is always going to be used and controlled by men in some way. So, and obviously what she's just been through with Mattson just reinforces that point. So she's just choosing to absorb the least worst version of that world, which is she picks the man who she at least chose, the one she married, and also who owes her something because he's the father of her child.
Yeah.
So that's the only way she can grapple what remains of the power is to pick the least worst man to be attached to in it. And that is desperate, but says a lot about how power works in business and monopolies.
But that final scene where they're in that really bleak car ride, we're saying bleak a lot, aren't we? The bleak car ride away with
the not
Shiv
quite
and Tom.
Holding hands.
Yeah, this was, it is the most distant hand holding you've ever seen. But I looked at that and thought, actually, Shiv has won because Shiv is going to be running this show. Shiv has become Shiv's Marsha. She'll never get the recognition.
But look what she's given up for that. She will never run it on her own terms. She always has to run it through a man. That, yeah, I mean, to, yeah, watch that as a woman, she's not one. She's not one. She is doing what she can in the world in which she lives,
yeah,
which is fucking desperate. Sorry. No, to watch that, I can't see any win for her other than clawing back what she can.
But isn't the truth of it that, like, nobody is ever going to win in this world? In order to win, you must be a monster.
Yeah.
And they try as they might, they can't actually be monsters. Everyone who shows a shred of humanity in this show is destroyed or humbled by it. Mm. And the only one who could ever stay on top is one of the great horrors of fiction, Logan.
Mm.
You know, yeah, you can't win unless you are that thing.
That moment where it's described by his brother at his funeral, how they had to communicate through their eyes only, or as immigrants, as a child, age of four. That was brilliant because it gives you one detail that tells you everything you need to know about how somebody becomes that person.
Yeah. I want to talk about some of the key scenes in this, because it is structured, it's movie length, and it's structured like a Bond movie with changes of location. And the Caribbean air cleaner, we're gonna clear the air in the Caribbean at Mom's place, in which Shiv and Kendall trace Roman, who is now completely beaten and wrecked, who is retreated to Lady Caroline's Caribbean retreat. And it starts out as just purely callous instrumentalism. They just want him to use him. But as you said, they kind of warm to each other. Mm. And it's, I mean, Alex, as a drama guy, you know, we often see the last chance to be happy and how the characters fumble it. And that,
yeah, I mean, I thought that was a really beautiful scene in the kitchen, because freed from having to make that enormous choice, I thought it was the first time they were actually free to be kids with each other, to be happy with each other, to be siblings. And it was one of their lightest moments throughout the four seasons. And I also, can I just say, I fucking loved Lady Caroline's Englishness.
Brilliant.
Just her, yeah, Englishness to do with food and
food,
what was in,
yeah,
her fridge, and the butt ends of the,
and the
bread
contrast,
that are frozen. And
yeah,
the contrast between old money,
old
British
money, that's
class
it,
system,
yeah,
and American gaudy wealth.
That is absolutely it.
Perfect.
It's old money. She doesn't, yeah, have anything to prove.
She's freezing the end of the loaf, and she's like, "Oh, it's hearty fare, but it's small portions." She will even withdraw food.
The other thing I really, yeah, I mean, she's a terrifying character in many ways. I'd love to know more about her. I wish, one thing that makes
she's
me
a spin-off.
Sad. Yeah, I'd love to see her.
I love Harriet Walters as well, as an actress, just,
yeah,
tremendous.
Yeah, she's perfect. But the other thing I really liked about this whole section when they meet up at her house is that when the other two siblings arrive, Roman is already there, relaxed into it, and there's a sense that the way he already is mentally is the way it's going to play out. He's wearing like board shorts and a t-shirt, yeah, and beads. He's completely dropped any corporate appearance, and he's back to being childlike in a way, sitting at his mum's, yeah, house, wearing, you know, having a drink while everything goes busy's on around him. And he's at the place where they all have to end up at the end, which is letting go of what they've all been fighting for. And it was almost like foreshadowing, I think, the ultimate resolution that they all have to, yeah, let it go.
Yeah, because Roman kind of goes, Roman throws himself into the mob, almost willing to have the shit kicked out of him at the end of the preceding episode, and comes out of it having shed everything, doesn't he? And
until the last minute where he has to really let it go, and then he does have that waver, yeah, doesn't it, where he stares himself in the glass table of the boardroom. And,
yeah.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
What did we make of the swimming in the Caribbean bit? Because I've for this entire season, I've been expecting Kendall to drown himself.
Yeah.
Every time he looks at a glass of water, I think he's going to drown himself. I really thought that he was swimming up to that little landing station. That would, as with Logan, he would simply vanish in the narrative.
There's a very good long read on Vulture about Kendall's relationship with water and the symbolism and everything. And, you know, while all those elements are there, the getting lost, the sort of the sense of the self disintegrating basically into the water, there's also a cleansing quality to the water. And I thought that particular swimming scene, it really was about just cleaning themselves off the damage they've inflicted on each other, you know, throughout these years, rather than something more ominous. What I'm interested to know is that at that point, they seem genuinely decided and genuinely united. So I want to know why you two thought Shiv changed her mind, because I think that's a genuinely interesting.
Well, I've already hit on it, really. I think she changed her mind because she looked around and saw that her only chance of any kind of future employment, I mean, you know, power, I suppose, is through a man, and she's decided she has to pick her horse, and she doesn't want it to be her brother. She wants it to
be
the man.
But she knew that going into the meeting.
Yeah, but it's that last minute thing of, well, do I really want to live out what my father wants for me as a woman, or do I want to pick my life, which is what I was left with.
I think that's true. I also think it's true that the story of the Roy siblings is almost not a story of money and power at all. It's just a story of abused children crammed together in an environment that they fear to leave but can't stay in. Mm. And I think her decision was pushed absolutely by that, but also by the fact that she can't bear to be part of that unit, and
anymore.
That means disagreeing with it, and that means breaking it, even though she's had right in front of her a vision of how it can actually be really nice.
Honestly, I've never woken up happier to be an only child than I did this morning.
I was watching it thinking how glad I am that, like, my brothers are pretty sound and my parents are pretty sound, and that the watching the constant, not just from Logan, but also from Lady Caroline, constant
abuse.
Digs at all of the children. You know, right back to the early seasons, you know, Kendall is dragged out of a car where he has killed a man. And what does Logan say? Oh, you're having a bit of a gay thing with him, were you? He has to get it in. You know, Shiv is clearly pregnant and Lady Carol has to allude to weight. Mm. You know, they cannot not pick at these children and peck at them.
Yeah,
and the
yeah.
children have learned that. I know it's a commonplace from everything that's been written about the show that hurt people, but you see it playing out there. And I can see a timeline where Succession is not about money. It's about a tiny corner shop.
Man hands on misery to man.
I thought it was the clincher. I thought was just how terrible Kendall's presentation to the board was.
Yes, that was brilliant.
In that final moment, I just thought he went in arrogant, cocky, demeaning them, swinging his dick around, and she looked at him and she thought, I can't have you in charge of me.
But also, she knows that
however many decades,
she knows that that's armor Kendall. That's fake Kendall. That's Kendall presenting as he thinks he ought to, when in fact, the Kendall that she knows is real is pathetic and is terrified. The thing that really breaks it.
Yeah, but they helped elect a fascist president. You know.
Yeah, but
armor Kendall does have a cost.
That's true. But yeah. Also, Shiv was the only one who had disquiets about that. But the moment when it really breaks, and the family, I think, is broken irreparably, is when Kendall lies to her face about killing the waiter. Mm. He said it never happened, and she knows it happens. And well, she knows that he knows.
There's some speculation on the world of the internet about whether he's actually telling the truth at that point and that it is a false memory. And we're meant to go back and review our version of the end of the first series. So that made me want to go and watch the first series again.
This is not a show that has given us hallucinations and dream sequences, though.
No.
So I don't buy that.
No. I mean, the straight obvious version is that he's lying to get what he wants in that moment.
Well, the psychologically revealing version is that he actually believes it. That he believes in his own myth so much that he can remake the past.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Greg and Tom, though.
Yeah.
Because the sticker.
Greg slapping Tom was one of my most satisfying moments ever.
Yes. That bathroom has seen a lot of events, hasn't it? I love that. Do you remember in the first series, that's where Kendall goes to have his breakdown when he first learns that his dad's turned back.
Oh, that's true.
And so it's almost like the sight of... It's where they go when they're suddenly faced with some dilemma in this awful role of being the next CEO. And I thought it was a great echo.
To see
that happen in that bathroom. I thought that was very clever.
Well, I think Tom stickering Greg was one of the... that was the up where we belong moments of great reconciliation. Like, you're a piece of shit, but I've got you. And I'm like, you know, there is an atom of humanity inside you. And the fact that
he recognizes himself in him,
the idiot, who can wander into all sorts of stupid situations, and it all turns on Greg's presence of mind to use a Swedish translation app to find out what's really going on. It's actually Greg who wrecks it all.
I mean, Greg, you can almost imagine this entire shit show playing out again in 30 years when Greg has been promised the succession.
Yeah, absolutely. I can see it. So did we get the feeling then that the writing team had been writing to this ending throughout, that Jesse Armstrong had this in his head, an image of Kendall sitting on a bench, fucked?
In general terms, I have no doubt that that Armstrong had it in his head that none of them can get it.
Mm. Yeah.
But I think as the characters develop and take a life of their own, what that means to each of them will have changed significantly. Incidentally, can I just say that Roman, when he goes to the bar, he orders Jerry's favorite drink.
Mm, yeah, good point.
We've never seen him drink a martini before.
Yeah.
And that someone... Just before we recorded, so I haven't had time to go and check it. If you're listening, Daniel, thank you for the tip, or curse you if you got it wrong. In the background, in the bar, you can see Nan.
Oh. As a potential route to something or other?
I have no idea. But that's true, it can't be a coincidence, right?
That is true, but also...
But Nan Pierce is behind him at the bar.
But also, he's the only one who looks happy. And this is the guy who said early on, I think it's in the very first season, when he thinks he's on the outs, that's it, this place was a cage to me anyway, I'm free at last.
Mm.
And maybe he wasn't bullshitting. Maybe, you know...
Oh, he shows real self-awareness, the only one who does, at the end of that fight scene, just outside the boardroom, when he says... It's all bullshit. This is all bollocks.
We are
bullshit. We are all basically saying, we're all shit at this. This is not for any of us.
Let's just accept who we are.
What he's good at is licking Peter Munnion's cheese. That's what he's good at, which I loved.
That was great.
That was one of my favourite. My other favourite bit in the Caribbean was, I believe Pink Floyd did a poo in the swimming pool. that was particularly fantastic.
But the thing is, I can see a life further on. I can see a hinterland. It may not be a particularly hopeful hinterland, but I can see a life beyond this point for every single one of the characters, which I think is testament to the writing of the series, actually. We might disagree about it, but I can imagine very firmly what each one of them goes on to do and how things turn out for them.
What are we going to miss most?
Well, I want to say one thing for this last series that I've been so impressed by, and I don't see in other writing, which I'm going to miss, which is the clever way Armstrong has created this world in which we are so along with the characters that we see the world in the way they do, even while criticizing them, while being able to see that they're awful people. So real events don't touch these people. There are riots outside. There are flunkies who produce all these boardroom reports who we never meet but are there in the room. We don't know what happens to them. We don't know anything about them because they're irrelevant to their lives. And yet they're written in enough that we can see that there's this whole world outside. And I don't think I see that attention to detail very often in other writing. And I'm just will miss that.
The attention to detail running down to the chyrons on the TV screens in the title
exactly
sequence.
Exactly that, yeah.
Americans will be entombed. Chinese hack will entomb Americans in their SUVs. Man can't stop thinking about ducks. These are the things. And the thing, I mean, obviously, the rich tapestry, all the rest of it. What I really miss is Greg trying to talk fancy to Logan when he's had sex with that woman and he says, "I never meant to soil these halls." It's like, what, how is your mind constructed?
I think I will miss nothing about it. I think it's perfect as it is, and I'm glad there is this perfect thing there in the world that I can watch and rewatch and rewatch and will never... You know, someone won't take it and shit the bed with the last act of it. It's going to be like Fawlty Towers. It's going to be a thing to be enjoyed for future generations.
Knowing when to end is so important, isn't it? And it's so rarely seen.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, if I had to pick something, I would say that I will never hear again the infinite variations on that incredible musical theme that just keeps evolving from sort of choral requiem to baroque thing to a Chopin sort of mournful little piano tristesse
and a shit ton of
hip-hop. I will miss hearing that everything.
Well, I think there's one thing we can agree. They should never bring it back.
Yeah,
no, they should never. But I would be very interested to see what Jesse does next. He's clearly a very, very clever person.
Well, he can probably write his own ticket, and we will look forward to him doing that. Listeners, thank you for listening to Succession Cast. It was full of spoilers, and we don't want to hear any complaints. Thanks for listening. We love you, and you are serious people. We'll be right back.